Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Barling and Barrett. My name is Simon Barrett, and I'm joined by my good friend, veteran trial attorney, Manny Barling. Manny, hello.
Hi, Simon. How are you on a beautiful day in Los Angeles?
I'm hot. You know, it's hot here in Mississippi. It sure has been a busy week. Where the hell does the time go?
I don't know. I mean, we're in the middle of August. This year has gone as fast as any year I can remember. But, you know, when you get over the age of 40, they start moving a lot quicker.
Yeah, and we do have a youngster on the panel today, but more on that in a moment.
By youngster, I think you mean my wife.
No, but that would be kind.
So we have a pretty interesting program lined up and some pretty interesting people joining us. Would you like to kick it off?
Yes, of course. We have our good friend Peter Haven, who is an attorney who is noted for representing the Goldmans in the O.J. Simpson matter. Peter is resting peacefully at the beach where it's a lot cooler than the rest of us. And, Peter, welcome. I hope you got out of that sand today to join us.
Well, I did indeed, and it's nice to be back. Thank you all very much.
And, of course, my wife and co-author, Ashley F. Brooks, who, besides that's a dynamic actress, and Ashley is bringing to us all her years of experience in the health business as a former RN and writer. And Ashley, welcome to the show again today.
Thank you. I'm still on RN, though, but I'm just not practicing at the moment.
Except
well,
on me.
That's exactly right. We continue to practice on you, dear.
Our guest today is Adam R. Fox of the law firm of Squire and Sanders. And Adam represents the sugar interests in a very high-profile lawsuit against high fructose corn syrup. And it's a very interesting topic, the lawsuits here in Los Angeles. And for those people who don't understand this, in the last 30 years, the consumption of sugar, table sugar particularly, has fallen. But the overall sweetness of all drinks has gone up because of the use of genetically modified corn and high fructose corn syrup. And it's really interesting because Sanjay Gupta, the expert on CNN, likes to describe us all as corn chips walking. On May 31st of this year, the FDA told the Corn Refiners Association that, I believe the quote is, they're not allowed to change the name of high fructose corn syrup to corn sugar. And we're going to discuss today the differences and why sugar is something that comes naturally and high fructose corn syrup is something that looks like a scene out of a movie where a scientist draws this chemical formula on a board, and at the end, you draw the line as high fructose corn syrup. I like to describe it as cooking it up in a giant vat, much like methamphetamines. And there is an analogy between the two. And the last analogy before I go to Adam is, I think this is very similar to our controversy over big tobacco. They lied to America for years about the effects of nicotine until Jeffrey Wiegand disclosed all of their internal papers. And I believe the Corn Refiners Association are lying to America about the effects of high fructose corn syrup until we have a whistleblower like Wiegand who will bring all of this to the surface. But in the meantime, I congratulate the sugar owners for taking on a fight against a fellow major corporation in the United States. Usually we see this only in intellectual property, IBM versus Xerox, Apple versus Microsoft. So, Adam, tell us, what made the sugar interests finally get so fed up with high fructose corn syrup that they decided to act?
Well, thank you very much. First, thanks, everyone, Simon and Manny in particular, for this opportunity. You know, what really started it off is the fact that the Corn Refiners Association ran an advertising campaign just a few years ago, and they were spending millions of dollars from their membership, companies like Cargill and Archer Daniels Midland supporting this enterprise, where they advertised high fructose corn syrup as something that was natural. they claim that your body can't tell the difference between high fructose corn syrup and sugar. They said they were nutritionally the same. And the advertising campaign even went on to the point of describing high fructose corn syrup as corn sugar, while the CRA, that is the Corn Refiners Association, still had their petition in front of the FDA that you mentioned pending to allow them to call it corn sugar on ingredient labels. As you mentioned, that petition was very recently denied, and yet it was striking that the Refiners Association continued to have those commercials still run for weeks after that decision by the FDA came out. So was this multi-million dollar nationwide advertising campaign that was attempting to equate high fructose corn syrup with sugar, that and on top of that, the effort to recharacterize high fructose corn syrup as corn sugar, something that the FDA has said it is absolutely not, that prompted my clients, which is really a large group of sugar farmers and other growers and producers of sugar, to challenge the Archer Daniels Midlands and Cargills of the world and their trade association. And before I go back to you, I just want to clarify one point. That is that you can look at this as a battle between, you know, two titans. I think some of the media have described it that way, you know, two titans of the food industry world. But the reality is that on the side that I'm representing, we're mostly dealing with farmers. We're dealing with smaller companies and many cooperatives of farmers that are together. If you take all of my clients together, their net worth does not even approach that of the agribusiness giants of Cargill or ADM. So this is really more a battle of David against Goliath, people who are producing something that is natural and for which we have seen the consumption go down by nearly 40% the last 40 years. That's the real natural sugar that people used to consume lots of before we had many serious health problems. And then on the other hand, we have the agribusiness giants that, as you said, are using a Frankenstein type of product, which requires two molecular level changes to become sweet. You can't cornstarch isn't sweet, but they put it through two molecular level changes and are using that. And my clients are just fed up. You know, if they want to compete fairly in the marketplace, that's one thing. But when they start misrepresenting the nature of the good that they are producing, that's when my clients said, we have to sue.
Well, good for them. And, in fact, I wish you'd come back for a moment and explain in simple terms, if there is a simple term for this, for our audience, that molecular change, because I always describe it as cooking up in a vat. And by the words, their words they used for so many years that bothered me were nature identical. And, you know, I used to say that if that's as nature identical as Robbie the robot is to a human being, because, you know, the minute you start having to cook something in a lab, how can it be natural? So if you'd be kind enough to explain that for our audience, I think it will help them.
Sure. Let me give it my best shot, because I am a lawyer and not a scientist. I think maybe one of the easiest ways to think about it is there was actually a sworn affidavit by a gentleman named Peter Buzanel, and he provided this affidavit on behalf of Archer Daniels Midland, Cargill, the Corn Refiners Association, and some of its other members back in 1997 to the Mexican government. The reason why he provided it was because they asked him to, and what they were attempting to do at that side was persuade the Mexican government that high fructose corn syrup was not identical to sugar, and that, in fact, was a very different product. They wanted to do that in order to avoid some anti-dumping sanctions, but the reasons aren't important. What is important is that in this affidavit he said, in the case of sugar, the production process is one of extraction, that sugar cane is converted into raw sugar by extracting juice from the stock. The juice is then clarified, boiled, and crystallized, and this raw sugar is transported to a refinery for further processing into refined sugar. Same essential things happen when you're dealing with sugar beets. It is a process of extraction. There is a molecule, many molecules, inside of both sugar cane and sugar beets, and it's called sucrose. And this molecule is simply extracted, and that's what we associate with sugar. That's table sugar. Now, the sucrose molecule itself is created by it's created by nature, but there are two subcomponents to it. And chemically, they're referred to as sugars with an S at the end. But separately, neither one is the equivalent of table sugar. These two smaller molecules are fructose and glucose. And they have a molecular bond. And they are always, when they're in the sucrose molecule, the table sugar molecule, a 1-to-1, 50-50 ratio of each of them. And the human body breaks it down, breaks down that chemical bond. It has to break it down in order for the smaller fructose and glucose to be metabolized in the bloodstream. High fructose corn syrup is something that, frankly, comes in many different forms. There is not a single high fructose corn syrup. What you do is the corn wet milling industry basically has used advanced technology, particularly highly automated processing systems and the use of enzymes, to change the molecular structure of the corn starch. Changes it first so that it's all glucose, a syrup of glucose, so that's what you would call corn syrup, just regular old corn syrup. But then it changes it again so that there's fructose, that other and much more sweet element, and they mix it together so that they can create different concoctions. Some are about 42% fructose. Some are 55% fructose. The fructose level can sometimes go up to 90% in products that people consume, and there's no labeling requirement. It can all be called high fructose corn syrup. And the reason why this is of concern to some people is because many scientists have reached the conclusion that fructose, that it's an overconsumption of fructose that is dangerous to the human body. And they also distinguish between what is the free fructose in high fructose corn syrup versus the fructose that is molecularly bonded in natural sugar. Because when you're dealing with free fructose, it doesn't have to be, it doesn't interact with that enzyme in the human body that has to break down natural sugar. So if that's not too complicated for you, I hope that answers. And if it is, I'm sorry.
I thought you were a lawyer, not a scientist.
I thought that was brilliant. I've actually pulled up a recipe today because I thought, I'm sure you probably, Adam, have this recipe, but I just wanted to pull it up and read what how you could make high fructose corn syrup in your own home. This is a joke. Please do not try to do this at home, anybody. They use several chemicals. First, they include a caustic soda. Then they have hydrochloric acid, alpha amylase, glucoamylase, isomerase, L-tur-aid, powdered carbon, calcium chloride, magnesium sulfate, and two of those charming sounding chemicals, caustic soda and hydrochloric acid, contain traces of mercury. So this little mixture, you stir it up in a pot, and eventually, as you're saying, Adam, you eventually end up with whatever level of what is supposed to be a sweetener that is actually highly toxic. And I thought one of the interesting studies back in 2005 was done by Renee Default when she was with the FDA. She was an FDA researcher, and she found in high fructose corn syrup that 9 out of 20 samples of the high fructose corn syrup came out 45% were mercury. 45%. A little tiny bit to a kid is a neurological damage can be done with that. So then they're saying, oh, we're no longer doing that, but are they? Does anyone know, Adam, if they still have a problem with mercury with this? Or has formula changed?
Well, we hear mixed reports. I believe that there was a peer-reviewed study published just earlier this year, and Renee may have been involved in that one as well, where there was further analysis and conclusions that mercury was still in high fructose corn syrup. At the same time, I know that the Corn Refiners Association has claimed that there is not mercury in any high fructose corn syrup and that there are different methods of producing it. We have not, in this lawsuit to date, had any sort of that testing done, so I can't tell you for certain, but I know that it's a matter that is still hotly debated.
Actually, on the subject of the lawsuit, Manny, do you want to tell us exactly where it sits at the moment, that there was an important ruling made?
Well, actually, Adam's the one who's probably most up-to-date on it. As far as I know the state that we would often call testing the pleadings has just passed, and Adam, perhaps you can give us a more current status. Has anything occurred since then?
Sure. Well, there were actually two rounds of motions by the defendants to try and get the case thrown out of court. And the defendants in the lawsuit, as it now stands, are the Corn Refiners Association, Archer Daniels Midland, Cargill, Tate & Lyle Ingredient Americas, and Ingredion, although that was not their name when the lawsuit was initially filed. What they had attempted to do about a year ago was to say that the advertising was really not commercial speech whatsoever, that it was just a public education campaign. And they, in fact, in those papers and in various press releases, have accused the Sugar Association and its membership of trying to stifle free speech. The court rejected that argument. It's kind of interesting to me that the Corn Refiners Association has persisted in making this accusation in press release after press release because the court did reject that argument. But the court at the time also said that there was insufficient allegations, that we simply needed to plead more facts in order to bring in all of the member companies. And so we did. We repled some of the allegations in the complaint. We provided substantial details about the involvement of individual member companies as well as some of the executives at Archer Daniels Midland and Cargill. And they nevertheless filed another motion to dismiss, saying that they could not possibly be held into this lawsuit because their trade association was responsible for it. They had nothing to do with it whatsoever. It was just the trade association that they fund and control. Some of us thought that was a pretty ridiculous argument. It appears that the court agreed that it was an argument that should be rejected, and so most recently the court did reject that argument, and so those defendants are in the case to stay.
And where does the case head now? You know, are we going to see like months and months of nothing?
Well, I think that's called the discovery phase. And maybe the public sees nothing, but lawyers see nothing but their offices during discovery, right, gentlemen?
Thank you, Manny. You may see months and months of nothing, but I assure you that for myself and my colleagues who are working the case up, we intend to see a lot. We have already propounded requests for the production of documents as well as other aspects of written discovery. The defendants haven't produced any documents yet, but we're in the process of talking about that. It is still early on in the case, but we expect that documents will be produced. We're going to have to be reviewing them. Then we'll be taking depositions, and this will probably go on for a while. Now, of course, if there are issues that are not part of any protective order, if there are issues that are important to the public health, then you may be hearing somewhat about it. But otherwise, it's very normal for a lawsuit at this stage to be sort of out of the media's attention while we work it up and get ready for trial.
I want to come back to the media, but
Simon, I'd like you to take a moment and explain to our listeners why the Corn Refiners Association is not appearing on this show and expressing their viewpoints for our listeners.
Well, okay. I have a pretty rocky relationship with the Corn Refiners Association. They think that I'm the Antichrist, and Manny is not far behind me. Oh, and sorry, Ashley
and
as well.
What you should explain, Simon, is for Ash and I have written several books in which we have taken high fructose corn syrup to task for its effect on weight gain, diabetes, liver illnesses, and a variety of other things, and provided what I would call a mountain of research, which is probably far less than what Adam has, on the reasons why. And in the course of that, we operated a show for some period of time before my schedule altered it, called Surviving the 21st Century, in which we addressed current health issues. And over that period of time, we expressed many, many concerns about high fructose corn syrup, and Simon, the interviewer that he is, decided that he would try to have them on the show and give them an opportunity to express any disagreements they might have with us. And it, of course, caused somewhat of a disagreement between them and us about whether they should be on the show and the relative merits of their projects, which got down and dirty, right, Simon?
Oh, it certainly did. I had one brief conversation with head elf Audra Erickson, and you know it was clear that Audra could not possibly make time to appear on air. So you know when I started looking at today's program. I went back and played with the CRA and asked them very politely, you know, would they like to participate? Would Audra like to participate? And the PR wonk, well, actually, I think his title is Director of Communications, David Knowles.
His title's not Wonk.
You're right.
I thought that was an acronym or something. Go ahead.
No, that's definitely a British expression.
Okay. PR elf.
Okay.
You're right. I call them wonks. You're right. Anyway, he got back to me in no time flat and explained that Audra was tied up today. You know, way too busy drinking fizzy drinks or something. And, yeah, so I actually said this to my wife. I said, watch this. I know exactly what's going to happen. I'm going to invite him to, you know, bring anyone on the show, including himself. He'll say no. And I'll say, okay, if you kids aren't prepared to, you know, back this up, you know, by coming on air and talking to us, it's going to get ugly. And his response, you know, came back about 10 minutes later. No, unfortunately, there is no one at the CRA that's available on Sunday afternoon.
Yep, so that's how we get to where we are today. And I feel slighted.
Oh, so do I.
You know, and you know how lawyers take everything so personally, right, gentlemen?
Right. But
But
well,
you know,
I did tell him that you know, it was unfortunate that you know the CRA couldn't field someone to answer our questions, but I did promise that I would send them the link to the recording.
So let's get back to the business
at hand. Except, Manny, I want to cover one second, if I can. You talk about Audrey Erickson, and just so the audience knows who she is, she's the president of the Corn Refiners Association. She's and the Corn Refiners Association is a major corn product. They're major producers for Archer Daniel, Cargill, Corn Products International, National Starch, Penfor Products, Roque America, and Tate and Lyle Ingredients America. And her whole main thing is that she's also a lobbyist. So this girl has made a lot of money making sure that everybody gets discredited. Like I thought, you know, one of the interesting things was in the 70s, they said that in the late 70s there was scrutiny brought up, a published letter came out, and the against high fructose corn syrup, that it played a role in obesity. Well, later in 2004, the people who said this then had to recant and say this is a wrong hypothesis, which seems to be the ongoing theme, which the president of this corn refiners, Audrey Erickson, does an excellent job of making sure research doesn't get known.
Yeah.
Is that a good summary?
It is. Hey,
well,
I have to break in just for a second. Peter has been listening to all this, and Peter knows the way I work. I don't forewarn him about anything. Peter, what's your thoughts on this whole sugar business?
Well, I do love listening to it, and I've been forewarned about this this particular show for many, many weeks and months now. I've been looking forward to it. I knew sooner or later we were going to hit the sweet stuff. Adam, one question I had for you, it may be more than one question, but I'm just a little curious. Where is the lawsuit pending, and what exactly are the claims for relief that are being asserted?
Sure. We are – the lawsuit is pending in Los Angeles, downtown Los Angeles, in a federal court, which lawyers may know as the Central District of California. It's before Judge Consuelo Marshall.
Hey, Connie Marshall. She's great.
That's right. Yep, yep. Used to be the chief judge here, and thus far has shown exactly why. Very good jurist. And the claim, very simple. It is a federal claim under the Lanham Act for false advertising.
Okay. Well, I love Connie Marshall. She's great, and she'll let everybody say whatever they want to say before she makes a ruling on it. That was my experience with her. I was just curious about the legal claim being asserted. Now, does that get you a jury trial, or is that an equitable matter for a bench trial?
Great question. You know, the law is somewhat mixed on that depending upon the nature of the relief that you're seeking. So if you're just seeking equitable relief, like an injunction, then you wouldn't be entitled to a jury to resolve things, although many judges will use juries as advisors in those situations before they make their final decision. In this case, we are seeking an injunction, but we're also seeking money damages because of the effect on the sugar industry, and my clients in particular, of this advertising. So we are entitled to a jury, although, you know, I expect that the other side will probably try to challenge that as well. You know, one quick point about the decision of the Corn Refiners Association and the other companies that are involved not to have anybody on the show. They've been saying for months that they're very eager to have the case resolved on the merits. They want to get the merits out and the truth out, and they consistently say this in their press releases and their public statements. And yet all we have seen from them thus far is efforts to try and avoid the lawsuit, efforts to try and get away from the lawsuit. And then even here, you know, where Simon and Manny invite them to have somebody on the show to get their side out, they choose not to do so. So,
you should know that the first time somebody tells you all they want to do is tell the truth, that's the guy who's probably not going to do it.
That is an axiom in our profession.
from a big picture point of view, I have to admit that a few years ago, I don't know, maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, I don't even remember now, but I kind of drew the conclusion personally that basically all sweeteners were bad for you. That's what I did. And I just systematically tried to eliminate all sugar from my diet, and I just lumped everything together. What I'm gathering today is that corn syrup is a whole lot worse for you than...
It's toxic. It's toxic.
Yeah. Well, I it's just another tale of life in the world where corporations basically try to make money, and they don't care how they hurt the people making the money. They just want to make the money. At least that's the theme that I'm sensing. But I think that that's a universal tale, and that gets repeated over and over and over again. So I try to think of it in terms of just the ordinary consumer, because the problem with most of our consumers is that they don't really make decisions for themselves. They just, if you put it in a bowl and stick it in front of them, they eat it. And so from the ordinary consumer perspective, there's only, I was thinking about it, there's really only three sources of food, at least for a guy like me. There's only three sources of food. It's food I get at a restaurant, and I have no control or little control over that. It's food that somebody at somebody's house feeds me, and I still have little control over that. Or it's food that I buy and cook myself. And I guess the message is, people really want to scrutinize those labels and try to make very certain that they're not consuming high fructose corn syrup, or I would say anything that isn't just plain old ordinary sugar, I suppose.
Well, yeah, let me go a step farther, and then I'm going to ask Ashley to jump in. If you walk down the average supermarket aisle, Peter, you will look at every label and you'll be hard-pressed to find something that does not contain high fructose corn syrup.
Very
and
true.
Some of it is because it's used as a filler, besides the other dishonest uses at it. For example, a can of soda, they mix half sugar and half high fructose corn syrup. Why? Because sugar is required to disclose their presence, but high fructose corn syrup is not. So the high sugar and calories within the high fructose corn syrup. But Ashley, I want to come back to you for a minute. We write an awful lot about the issues involving genetically modified corn. And that's something, frankly, Adam, we don't hear a lot about in the arguments advanced by you and other people in the industry. So Ashley, take a moment and explain to our listeners, what genetically modified corn is, particularly the Monsanto brand, and how it's used for high fructose corn syrup and factors into this conversation.
Well, I want to start by saying when you say Monsanto, people understand this is the creator of Asian Orange in Vietnam. So please look up Asian Orange in Vietnam, and you'll find photographs of what it does. This is the same creator who is partners with the USDA. And also Archer Daniel Midland, who is part of the Corn Refiners Association, has been part of the USDA, or the USDA's partner in the high fructose corn syrup area since the late 1970s. So everybody's all buddy-buddies together. Now, this seed is taken, and the corn is created in a way that's going to allow a pesticide. So they redesign and recombine in a lab. They take this seed and they create it by creating, they will take your bacillus bacteria, or they will take the cauliflower mosaic virus. And each corn, by the way, too, and this is important for the trial, because this will alter the research that's done, and this is one of the things that they're doing to trip people up. They will take each, there's different types of maize, and different types of maize will accept different types, maize is corn. The different types of corn will accept different types of pesticide. And in the beginning, it sounds wonderful. We're going to use less pesticide. This is really healthy for you. It's terrific. But it actually, they ended up using 5 to 6, or 4 to 6 times the amount of pesticides right now is what the farmers are complaining of. They need so much soaking that people are now getting, not only do they get a toxic bacteria that's part of, and every part of that corn, in order for that corn to grow, in order for it to repeat itself in a cell, to grow, it repeats that bacteria, that altered state, that altered everything is within that corn. So you may be eating a virus, you could be eating a bacteria, and the recombining, according to the Institute of Safety, Dr. Mayho, there's tons of research done on this, although the scientists end up being defamed like everything else afterwards, but fired. But there's tons of research done on this particular thing where people, they don't know, and there's no research done that's independent, so we know what happens to the people who eat this corn. So you have added pesticide, you have chemicals in this high fructose corn syrup, you have this genetically altered substance that people can't even eat it. In King Corn, the farmers were laughing when somebody said, can you eat this corn? Because it's not edible. This is not a sweet corn. You can't eat it. There's a lot of it they're going to try to turn into fuel because you can't eat it. So they're taking this unedible stuff and they're throwing it into your daily food. And it's toxic. But the liver is the most important organ in your body. There's major organs, and one of the major organs is your liver. And so what happens is you are now eating this corn that your body cannot filter out. They showed on some mice and some mice research, within 2 weeks on some mice, within 6 weeks on some mice, definitely 100% within 6 months, it is going to have liver disease, pancreatic disease, kidney failure, depending on the maize, depending upon which pesticide they decide they're going to have to use in this genetically altered corn.
Well, let's go to the point. This genetically modified corn is the basis of high fructose corn syrup. So they take this renegade, creation of lab, a frankenfood, as it's popularly called, and then they squeeze it. They like to call it wet milling. That term to me is as ridiculous as nature identical.
Well, you heard the recipe.
Yeah.
I mean, you need that recipe to make this, and that's what people are putting into their bodies?
So, but people don't realize it. So what they do, when they take this product and they reduce it into that particular form, a liquid form, what they're doing essentially is creating a liquid form of genetically altered product that has the BT virus in it.
Bacteria.
Bacillus therapeutis, I think it's really called, into the high fructose corn syrup. Then it's milled and chemically treated to become what it is, and that has a tremendous amount of pesticides. So if they think the pesticides don't go into the fluids that ultimately make up the high fructose corn syrup, so not only do we have this issue with sugar, we have it as a carcinogen. We believe very strongly and published a great deal of work supported by research that that's a major contributor to cancer in our society right now, that high fructose corn syrup basically leads to liver failure. And I might point out that with the advent of high fructose corn syrup in the last 20 years, you may notice that dialysis is up in the United States at record levels, so high and so devastating that you are excluded from Medicare coverage on high fructose corn syrup, the effects of dialysis, which leads right to high fructose corn syrup.
Well, the first, and this is the thing that really bothers me with Audrey Erickson. Oh, she just gets me so angry because the woman she obviously doesn't care about people. If she cared about people, she could not represent this company, because this company is really doing something very bad to people. In the Princeton studies, which people like to, she will, you know, say, oh, this is not happening, this is not true. And in addition to the original Duke studies and other studies that were done, the beginning studies all showed you have fatty liver from this high fructose corn syrup. Then you have other studies with non-toxic or non-alcoholic cirrhosis, beginning of cirrhosis of the liver. So that means that you are starting to have stage 1 liver problems, stage 2 liver problems. The next is stage 3, which is cancer, and then failure. So you've already started the process of the first two. Now, if people think that they can get away with, I'll just drink however many drinks I want to have with this high fructose corn syrup, but it's also in everything. It's now in tomatoes. It's in, you know, so you have a combination of already a genetically modified vegetable in a can with preservatives, and then you also top that off with high fructose corn syrup. You have a recipe of a chemical disaster.
By the way, let's get basic with it. Even honey now contains high fructose.
It's so bad that it's illegal. But they have their testing for it. And normally, if you're going to test sugar, this is proof that this is different. If you check for sugar, you're going to have to check for certain things that you're going to do your lab test for. They have to check for a protein because it's so different from the sugar. And that's how they tell people are cheating, by putting high fructose corn syrup into the honey. It's different. It's a chemical makeup difference. And the body knows it. It cannot break it down. The liver filtering system cannot break it down properly. And you have increase of all this cancer. In 1994, when GMO came out, there was one out of 11 people, and all of us in the medical field were horrified. Right now, it's one out of two, one out of three of male and female. So you've got people, and one out of four women have breast cancer. Where do people think this is coming from? What is different? High fructose corn syrup. In everything, corn and everything. You can't even get an IV at a hospital without high fructose corn syrup.
Yes. And tell us that. I mean, by the way, I rarely hear Ashley rant like this, so you can tell how she feels about this.
It's very upsetting because if you know something is going to kill somebody or harm somebody, it is your responsibility to stop it. As human beings, and if the Corn Refiners Association, these people want to get out and say whatever they want to say, it's up to that person to take responsibility for their own life and what they put into their body, because these people don't care. Do you think that's true, Adam?
Well, you know, Ashley, I wish you wouldn't hold back and tell us what you really think.
It's so upsetting to me because it's hurting. It's hurting newborn babies. It's hurting children. It's hurting neurological damage. It does cancer. I mean, it's like this thing is very, very toxic for people.
As I said, she's a lawyer's wife.
Okay, I'm finished.
I do think that there are a couple of noteworthy additions that I can make to what you just stated, Ashley, and that is I myself was a bit surprised following the FDA's rejection of the Corn Refiners Association petition to change the name corn to corn sugar.
Right, me too.
In that petition, or in the rejection, the letter from Michael Landa, the director there, he specifically noted that corn sugar is a known ingredient. It's a separate ingredient. It's an approved name for crystalline dextrose. It has no fructose in it whatsoever. And he noted that corn sugar has thus been known to be an allowed ingredient for individuals that have hereditary fructose intolerance, which is deadly, or fructose malabsorption. And as a result, this was one of the rationales. He pointed out that changing the name for HFCS to corn sugar could put these individuals at risk and pose a public health concern.
Absolutely.
And the response of the Corn Refiners Association and Audrey Erickson was not to respond to that statement at all, and to simply characterize the FDA's rejection as something that was done only on narrow technical grounds. And I think it's somewhat striking when you consider what the FDA calls a public health concern as a narrow technical ground. That's point
number
one.
Even the CDC has written reports on it. CDC has written reports on the fact that this has increased. Let me pull this up right here. In the late 40s, since the introduction of high fructose corn syrup as cost-effective sweetener in America, the rates of obesity in the United States skyrocketed. This is the CDC saying this. Now I'm sure that Audrey's going to come in and say, well, you know, it's another report. We'll find a way to get around this one. In 1970, it was 15% of the U.S. population met with definition for obesity. Roughly one-third of American adults are considered obese today. 1/3. High fructose corn syrup is found in every wide range of foods, beverages, fruit juices, cereal, bread, yogurt, ketchup, mayo. An average American consumes 60 pounds of this sweetener per person every year. Now the campaign in D.C. right now is all about, you know, how are we going to take care of the health of people? What are we going to do for prevention? Well, instead of just saying, let's, you know, mouthing the word prevention, let's do something. I know Archer Daniel Midland happens to be, you know, a public-private partner with the federal government, and so since they're partners, let there be an unbiased source come in and some independent scientists come in that can actually speak up and speak up for the people of America. We're talking about the future of health, the future of children. I mean, this isn't just some game that these people that are making a lot of money on. This is talking about a human life.
Well, and let me just add, the second point that I wanted to make is you mentioned some studies in mice, and there was
right.
the Princeton study, which was
right.
in rats as well.
Listeners
should not be confused by that because, first of all, lots of decisions, food and drug, are made with testing on animals. But even more importantly, if they're really interested, there was a study published in peer-reviewed Journal of Metabolism earlier this year where they took 40 men and women, human beings, and they had them consume 24 ounces of beverages that were sweetened either with high fructose corn syrup or with natural sugar. And it was a randomized crossover study design. And they took blood and urine samples collected over a six-hour period. So it was not a long-term study. We wouldn't be able to see what upregulation of fructose sensitivity and things like that over the long term is. Just looking at acute effects, they looked at blood pressure, heart rate, levels of fructose, and a variety of other metabolic biomarkers. And the authors concluded that compared with sugar, high fructose corn syrup led to greater fructose systemic exposure and significantly different acute metabolic effects. And ultimately, they said that high fructose corn syrup is more likely to cause acute adverse effects than sugar. And the reason why this is something that ought to be frustrating to a lot of people, but it's particularly frustrating to my clients, is that not only has this advertising campaign gone out and said that high fructose corn syrup is natural, that it is, that the body can't tell the difference between real sugar and high fructose corn syrup.
It's so toxic.
But more than that is that we now have government taking steps based on that false advertising and the notions built into it. So we've seen and highly publicized in New York, also happening here now in Los Angeles, but it's going across the country. There are advertisements trying to get people to stop drinking as much of calorically sweetened beverages, sodas. And those advertisements show sugar packets being poured into glasses or being poured into a bottle, and they say things like, you wouldn't eat 22 packets of sugar, why are you drinking them? The truth of the matter is, they're not, because the vast, overwhelming majority of soft drinks in this country and calorically sweetened beverages, something like 90% of the sweetener that is used is high fructose corn syrup. It isn't sugar. And the study of metabolism that I was just mentioning, where it pits head-to-head sugar-sweetened beverage with a high-fructose corn syrup beverage, says that the results are not the same. And yet you don't see in the advertising that's going on by the government that high-fructose corn syrup is in your drinks. You see sugar, even though sugar isn't. That's a problem. It misleads people.
It absolutely misleads people, and it's very, very upsetting. And one of the other issues that has not been hit on, which I keep going back to with high fructose corn syrup, is there was Furter and Ansura. They stated that fructose consumption and obesity are linked because fructose consumption does not cause an insulin response. What this causes then, what it causes is that there's no suppression of the appetite because of it, which normally happens. So, you know, from hyperinsulinism after a meal, this is removed. So high fructose corn syrup is going to cause an addiction. So when people run it across the board, sugar, 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 all sugar is addicting, they forget sugar is actually has nutrition within it. The normal organic sugar has nutritional value and vitamins within it. And the body will, like you said in the beginning, it absorbs it, it utilizes it, the enzymes recognize it within their body because this is where we have evolved to. Our body allows us to say, we can utilize this. Our liver will utilize this. It has vitamins within it. The enzymes will kick up. It'll, you know, be, and it will store it as in a healthy energy, as opposed to high fructose corn syrup, which is stored as a very unhealthy. It leads to diabetes.
Well, you know, I'll give you a thought. Ashley tells a story about a friend of ours who had spent a couple months. Was it maybe even longer? A little less long, anyway. In Europe, and the first thing that she said to Ashley when she got back and they went out for some coffee was she couldn't help but notice how thin the children were in Europe, how good they looked, how different than the United States. And one of the reasons is because they're not pouring down high fructose corn syrup at every meal. And when you look at the change in American children since the advent of high fructose corn syrup, and the whole discussion we're having now about what's going on in our country in terms of the weight of our children, it's directly related to high fructose corn syrup.
The body can't metabolize it. It's not being metabolized. It does not get metabolized the same, exactly what you said in the beginning, Adam.
Yeah, and so I point to, by accident or intentionally, besides your what your clients are disturbed of out there, actually bringing in action on behalf of all Americans who are overweight, who need to know the truth about what they're consuming and how it affects them. And in a roundabout way, whether your clients really intend to do this or not, because I really don't know what their intentions are, and I don't intend to speak for them, they are championing younger children who really need an opportunity to space away from this stuff and find a life finding other foods to eat that are less harmful to their health. And I wonder how much your clients, Adam, believe in that besides their own commercial interests, because I think there is a bigger picture.
There absolutely is a bigger picture. And, you know, I deal regularly not only with the in-house counsel but the CEOs at my clients. And they do care very deeply and are very passionate about it. And frankly, you know, are sickened by the fact that a product that many of them have been making and growing on farms for generations is something that is now really being wrongly maligned. I mean, again, putting this all in perspective, during the very time period that we have seen these dramatic spikes in diabetes and hypertension and obesity and gout and cancer, during that very time period, the consumption of natural sugar in this country has gone down on a per capita basis by almost 40%. And yet people continue to point to sugar and say it's sugar and just group all caloric sweeteners together as if they are the same, based on this assumption that they are the same and based on advertising that says they are the same, even though the evidence is not there to support that. And the evidence that I'm aware of is frankly contrary to that very proposition. And I also want to point out that the Lanham Act, you know, this is one thing that Congress definitely got right. When the Lanham Act was passed, one of the reasons why is they specifically recognized that by giving competitors in the private marketplace the ability to sue one another for false advertising is something where they could, in essence, be championing the right of consumers to get the truth in advertising. They recognized it would be very difficult and very expensive for individual consumers or even classes of consumers to file such lawsuits, and so they structured the act so that the incentives would be right and people could have their champions. And, you know, call me biased because they're my clients, but I think that the sugar farmers and other producers I represent are the champions of the American people.
I absolutely agree with you.
Yeah.
Okay.
And by the way, this is in effect a pseudo version of what we like to call private attorney general acts, where the government accepts it doesn't have sufficient lawyers and the ability to handle every issue that comes across its desk. So by empowering companies and other people to advance those issues, they advance the issues of the American public by allowing others to do so on their behalf. And, Peter, I wonder if you feel any differently about that observation.
Well, Peter, let me preface your answer. I'm not an attorney. I'm outnumbered today. What the hell is the Lanham Act?
The one you just said, Manny?
No, I was letting Peter go. I'm going to let Peter answer that one.
You know, I don't do much Lanham Act work. I do a lot of state law work dealing with unfair competition law, which is Business and Professions Code 17200. Adam's probably much more familiar with the Lanham Act than I am, but the Lanham Act is a federal act, and I always viewed it in connection with antitrust actions, but obviously there are components of it which provide for deceptive and misleading advertising practices, what I gather. But I don't do a lot of work with the Lanham Act. I do most of my work in 17200. But, Adam, perhaps you can tell us a little bit more about the Lanham Act.
Sure. Well, I mean, you know, basically it's sort of a hybrid act, and it includes many different elements. And, the one that really relates most clearly to the false advertising provision that we would think of on a more regular basis is trademark. When people have trademarks or trade names, That is something that federal law protects. There are also state laws in California and many other states that have local or regional protection for that. But it's largely thought of as a trademark act. And yet there are provisions of it which really deal exclusively with false advertising. When you're not just dealing with someone's brand name, or trade name, but you're dealing with the nature of the advertising itself. When someone claims that a product is something that it is not, and that is quite simply what we have here. We have advertising that claims high fructose corn syrup is natural, that calls it corn sugar, and that says that your body can't tell the difference. And we believe that the facts clearly demonstrate otherwise. As I mentioned earlier, there were some papers that Archer Daniels Midland, Cargill, the Corn Refiners Association, and others filed more than a decade ago, where they took exactly the opposite position that they have taken in this advertising campaign. So we think even their own admissions are going to help prove our case. But there's also a whole host of research that has come from independent bodies since then, which we believe will demonstrate quite convincingly to a jury that the advertising is false and that we have been damaged and that we are entitled to recompense.
Adam, irrespective of the monetary damages, if you could get what you want from these people in terms of ceasing their advertising practices, what you'd be looking for is just them to stop making false representations about high fructose corn syrup. Your relief doesn't include stopping the manufacture of it or the use of it. It's just targeted towards getting them to stop making false statements about it.
Well, I think that's in part right. I mean, we're certainly not trying to stop their ability to compete fairly in the marketplace. I mean, if they want to sell something and the government says it's okay for them to sell, that's not what this lawsuit is about. I understand certainly from the comments of Ashley and others, the research that I've read myself, that there are many people who passionately believe that it shouldn't be sold. But that's not what this lawsuit is about, because the confines of the Lanham Act don't even provide that kind of relief. What we're seeking is for them to stop the campaign, but it's also a little bit more than stopping the campaign, because when you have advertising that's gone on, this advertising here began in about June of 2008, so now we're 4 years in. You can't just spend $50 or $100 million in advertising and then suddenly stop one day and you assume everything's gone back to normal. People haven't been influenced by it. They won't continue to be influenced by those false messages for years. So we think it's very important not only that we be able to recover damages, but beyond that, that a portion of those damages, at least a portion, and maybe a large portion, be earmarked for corrective advertising. Because, you know, as I mentioned, the clients I represent, they are not anywhere near as large of companies. They don't have as much cash as the defendants. And so, you know, we really want to be able to have at least equal time. And, you know, I've talked to experts who say that equal time isn't enough because you can't necessarily reach all the people. When you're running a TV ad, if somebody was, you know, watching a television show 3 years ago, and they saw the ad and it influenced them subliminally or otherwise, there's no way to be sure that running a new ad, even during the same time slot, is going to be able to reach that same person. So that's why corrective advertising is often doubled or even trebled the amount of the original advertising spend.
Yeah, I'd like to clarify something, too, and not because we're sensitive at all about it, Adam, but no, we aren't advocating the ban of it. Personally, I wouldn't mind it, but I'm not advocating it. I don't bother people who smoke cigarettes, even though I'm staunchly against it. They have a divine right to, but as you just pointed out so eloquently, the issue here is they need to hear the truth, the correct facts, and if they want to make a decision to destroy themselves, then there's nothing I can do to stop them. But if they do it knowingly, then that's their choice. Here, it's not that. That's not the case. What's going on is a concerted effort to fool people, and I don't like that. And that's the element of dishonesty that Ash and I are focusing on.
Absolutely.
And when you talk about stopping things, the other area which you've read any of our papers that's really of concern to us is the false advertising by using medical reports, Duke University and others, that are bought and sold. We've written, our books contain stories about how approximately 1,800 professors at Harvard University were corrupted with bribes by Monsanto, everyone else. I mean, it was horrible. So here we have a system where we cannot rely on our universities to be honest, or in other cases, as you point out with UCLA, they're intimidated out of telling what we all know should be the truth. So along the way, they have corrupted the very structure of American education and the very structure that provides Americans with honest information regarding the food they eat. Mm-hmm. And I think that is equally important, and it's something that probably rankles you because you're combating reports. So, for example, I believe Duke came out against them, and then Princeton came out with an article against high fructose corn syrup, and they immediately hired people at Duke and paid them off to write something contrary to what you're.
Well, actually, Duke actually had a brilliantly did research, because one of the things I liked about Duke's studies in 2010 is they used 427 adults. And they found that it increased consumption of high fructose corn syrup was definitely associated with the scarring in the liver or fibrosis, and with patients with non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. Then, though, right afterwards, Manny, that's the point. They had this. They did the research. It absolutely was no doubt about it. Then, shortly afterwards, you're right. They came back and they said, "We need to do more studies." And it's this kind of thing that's going on about, you know, I want to know how much money the Corn Refiners Association, Archer Daniel and Monsanto and these people have paid Duke University. I'd love to know how much their research departments are getting.
Yep, that's a big deal. Also, Ashley points out, and we've also chronicled in our articles, the bad habit of having public relations firms writing these what we call abstracts. So frequently when you turn on the news and they read the abstract about there's a new drug out that does A, B, C, D, well, they're reading from an abstract released by a drug company, which an abstract would describe as somewhat of a summary, probably larger than what we lawyers refer to as headnotes in a case or in an opinion. And basically what they do is they help shorten the description of the case so others can understand it. Well, if those are being written by PR firms and not scientists, do you really think that what you're hearing is some type of scientific response? And the answer is no.
And Manny, just to clarify, too, when we did do a show on this on ghostwriting, if people want to listen to it, it's on iTunes. And the ghostwriting itself is something that is really big in, they have found on the medical journals. In 2008 and 2009, they found that among 630 articles, 7.8% of them were written by ad companies. They were not authored by the person who signed them. This is a large percent, and then they started doing more studies on it. And what happened is it really truly came out when they did the when after the hormone replacement therapy with women who ended up with breast cancer, and they produced 26 scientific papers that that said this is really it. And it turns out these were all written by, or a majority were written by, a lot of the abstracts were from ad companies. So you have your research, which is not being presented, and what is the real research? And this has been really frustrating. It's very difficult when we're writing the books, because in writing the books, our whole effort was to get my husband out of a wheelchair. He was in a wheelchair, too sick to go anywhere. He was, you know, he dropped 70 pounds without even trying, got out of a wheelchair, and is back to his practice. I mean, just by going organic and removing all the high fructose corn syrup and all these other toxic elements that are now in our food.
Yeah. And by the way, my body, as my wife describes, is somewhat like a Geiger counter. If there's high fructose corn syrup in food, within a short period of time, I start to sweat, I look just horrible, and I roll over in a ball and I'm deathly ill. And sometimes I'm in bed for 2 or 3 days. It can't be an accident. And, you know, one of the things the industry loves to say is, oh, that's anecdotal. That isn't subject to testing. Well, I believe in the proof is in the pudding type of research. You know, you give someone poison, they fall over and die, I guess that proves it's poison. And it's really that simple in life. So when I hear them say, oh, that's anecdotal, it only counts in a blind study. Well, most blind studies are controlled in a manner in which they're not blind studies. And that's one of the problems. So off of our rant, I want to get back to Adam. Is this an area of focus for your clients also?
The nature of studies and
yeah.
How they're...
The nature of the material they present to support their studies that are just challenging the truth of what's involved, because I believe what they do is so blatantly and openly dishonest in terms of disseminating information that it's a major factor in this.
Sure. I mean, it's obviously a serious concern, because there are several different scientists that we're aware of, and maybe to use the word scientist isn't exactly accurate, but there are people with some credentials of scientists who have taken a lot of money over the years with their professional associations, with the Corn Refiners Association, and others with aligned interests, who publish papers with tests that, as far as I can tell, the conclusions that they articulate in either the abstracts or in the press releases that go along with it are not really supported by the data. And so I think one has to be very careful when reading anything. You know, I mean, you shouldn't just take my word for things either. I mean, go ahead and read the piece in Metabolism published earlier this year about the effects of high fructose corn syrup and sucrose in the acute metabolic response in subjects. I mean, read the Princeton study. You know, read and look at the data.
Read the original Duke study.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, read them all, you know, and don't take anybody's word for it, because quite frankly, when you're just reading press releases, it's a little bit difficult to understand, even when you're just looking at abstracts. Even the peer review process itself can be distorted or biased by who the peer reviewers are and what their interests are. So it is an extraordinarily difficult problem to try and get the truth out. Money really talks sometimes, And it is a lot easier to spend millions of dollars on a campaign where you say whatever you want, even when the facts don't actually support it, than it is to get grants and funding for real research that is really testing this stuff. I mean, as has been mentioned several times, you know, high fructose corn syrup is something that entered the human diet only a brief short time ago. You know, the last 30 or 40 years is when we've seen this dramatic increase from zero to essentially half of the caloric sweeteners that people consume in this country today. And yet, as recently as 2008, 2009, you know, the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition published a supplement in, I believe it was December of 2009, and there were a number of papers there where they essentially claimed that there isn't really any difference. There's no data showing that there's any difference. When you read the papers, you see that the authors themselves admit that, well, no one has really begun testing sugar against high fructose corn syrup yet, or these tests are just beginning. And in fact, almost every researcher who has published in that supplement, even the people who have relationships with the Corn Refiners Association, they actually called for more study before anyone could make any conclusive statements. This was before the Princeton study. This was before that journal Metabolism study. This was before several different studies demonstrating, at least to the authors there, and you know, look at the data yourselves, that high fructose corn syrup has different metabolic effects than sugar.
And I would love it if I could sit here and go, you know, this is really a great thing because our government could use the money right now. This is great. This is super. I think they should move forward with this. You know, it's not like we want this result. This is the result. So it's very frustrating. It must be frustrating for you too, Adam.
It's a frustrating process. But I mean, the most frustrating thing to me is that we filed this lawsuit in April of last year. And again, you know, sorry to come back to this point, but we kind of wanted to press forward, move ahead, but we got multiple roadblocks thrown up and challenges trying to throw the lawsuit out of court. All the while, the Corn Refiners Association is saying that they're eager to vigorously defend their claims. We wanted to get the show on the road so that we could get the truth out, you know, go through the discovery process, get our hands on their documents, get our hands on their witnesses and see what they really have to say so that we can put them in the witness stand and cross-examine them in front of a jury and then allow the people to speak.
Yes, and that is the surest sign of the practice of law, that one side has something to hide when they, you know, people talk about scorched earth types of litigation using the medieval thing of burning the town down so nobody can go back. In their case, scorched earth frequently takes a different meaning, and that meaning is to obstruct, delay, and do everything they can to prevent anybody from dealing with the truth that's there. And they feel the longer they can go and the more money they can get you to spend, the more likely you are to quit. So I would describe it commonly as an army retreating across the sand, so to speak, and basically trying to slow the enemy down behind them so they don't have to deal with that enemy and they can buy time. And to me, that's all they're doing, actually, Adam, is they're buying time. And do you disagree with that, Peter?
No, that's exactly what they're doing. They're sitting on a little corporate empire, and if they believe that there are documents or information inside their confines which support your case, they're never going to give them to you, and they're certainly not going to give them to you easily, and they're not going to do anything to make it easy on you. That's just standard operating procedure. And I suspect at the end of the day, they'll, after pushing everything to the brink, they'll come to the table and they'll start to talk about a settlement. And that may be, God willing, and the wind at your backs 1 to 2 years from now.
Well, yeah, and by the way, their discussion of settlement will start with an attempt to get an agreement to have a confidentiality clause, so whatever they do in terms of settlement will not be released to the general public. And although I don't believe this particular judge would permit that, is, unlike state court, federal judges have a great deal more latitude in allowing that information to get out.
But Manny, how do you, or Adam, how do you, and this is a, because I'm not a lawyer, how do you keep this line between the two, where this company, Archer Daniel, and these companies are all partnered up with the United States government and with the federal government, and you're in a federal court. And so how do you, isn't there a line that should be somewhere saying, how do they make a decision based on keeping it fair when they are actually part of the lawsuit? They are part of that lawsuit.
Well, I don't think anyone in the judiciary feels that way, Ashley. Federal court's pretty independent, and they've been known to have very little sympathy even for presidents of the United States. No, the problem is actually in the other direction. Federal court is traditionally quicker, although Adam's describing an atmosphere where it is not quicker for him, and generally things move quicker because judges have less tolerance. For example, if this were in the courtroom of Manny Real, we know that would be a whole different tempo. You know, Adam wouldn't be laughing the way Peter is if it were. And so I think that that's a little different issue.
I agree 100% with Simon that, I mean, the federal judiciary and its independence is something that I've certainly seen throughout my career, and that I am seeing as well with Judge Marshall in this case in particular. So I've got no complaints about what the judge is doing, the way that she is managing the case whatsoever. I think she's doing a stupendous job. Given the fact that we've got a lot of parties in this case, there have been a lot of motions already filed. My real complaint is the fact that, you know, we have still not gotten our chance to have any documents or talk to any witnesses from the other side. And, you know, in fairness, they haven't from ours either. But the reason why is because we are still at such an early stage of the case because of the repeated efforts to simply try and avoid talking about the merits.
Yeah. Well, and you know, by the way, Ashley's comments are rooted in the fact that we have a great deal of experience across the country litigating for some of my larger clients where, shall we say, there's a different set of laws in some of the smaller jurisdictions in the U.S. than there are in the majors, and Ashley's seen more than her share of that, what you all three of us like to call local law. So that's why Ashley raises that question.
And I think it's a question the audience may raise, Manny, and I think that it's good to hear, and everyone should hear, that it's a fair trial. It's going to be a fair trial, and that they will be represented.
Well, I'm going to go a step farther, since I'm the one who's practiced law probably the longest in this group. Not only is this particular court one of the fairest I've seen, but I don't think she's a good choice of judge for them. I really don't. I think they're going
for who?
For the Corn Refiners Association, because this particular judge really puts up a very little nonsense. She's not easily distracted from what she's doing, and sooner or later she will, as we like to say in the business, lower the boom on them, because then there'll be issues, particularly in discovery, that she will not like and not tolerate. And I'm sure all of you agree with me that Judge Marshall can certainly tell the difference between truth and fiction when it's in front of her. So you have any comments at all about that, gentlemen, or do you rather not comment on the federal court today?
I've got no argument with you.
Connie gives everybody a really long leash. She gives them a long leash. She lets them to do what they think they need to do. And then at the end of the day, she lowers the boom. And she's a great judge. Almost every federal district court judge I've found is a great judge. But it's litigation. There's just nothing you can do about it. It's going to grind its way to its inevitable end. There'll always be delay tactics. And at the end of the day, there'll be a lot of pressure to get some sort of settlement done. And it'll be interesting to see how it all pans out. I think the one thing that I'm convinced of is nobody should be eating high fructose corn syrup. They just shouldn't.
And that's
something that everyone can do, and they can start doing it now. And, you know, if you win the grass grassroots battle, all these other battles fall into line, in my opinion.
Hey, not using high fructose corn syrup is harder than you think.
Oh, I know it is. I know it is. I know it is. It's in everything.
Right. In fact, I was in a particularly mischievous mood. It was about a year ago. Walked into my local supermarket and asked which aisle I could find the high fructose corn syrup on. And poor little kid, he had no clue what I was talking about.
Well, that raises an interesting question. Is the regular corn syrup that you see sold in supermarkets, you know, what's it called, Caro or something? I take it that's different.
No, it isn't. It's
oh, okay. Well,
corn syrup. Why? Because I deliberately deleted it from an article, and immediately somebody in the corn industry sent me an email saying, "You don't know what you're talking about. You can find it in Caro syrup." And I joked with Ashley. I said, "See." And so at the end of the day, yes, it is in there, and they love to remind you of it. But what bothers me about that is that's being given to children. When I was young, the popular thing to give our children, if they, you know, they had gas after a meal or something, is you'd give them a little bottle of Caro syrup and let them, you know, suck down some sugar water, and it would make their gas go away. Well, now you give them that, and you know, what are you giving your child? I mean, it's really terrible.
And one of the things, Adam, that you, if you ever have an opportunity to speak to Dr. Dantini, who we had on the show quite a few times when we were doing our health show, the three of us, he found after surgeries that he was having horrible reactions from his patients. And he was doing children, and they were just terrible, terrible responses from after surgery, some more than others. And he's an allergist. And so everyone goes, "Oh, well, just an allergist, you know." Well, it turns out that they're no longer using the glucose of my youth in the bottles of the IV or in the medicine. They are now using high fructose corn syrup. In fact, you can't even buy your, since Excedrin went off the market, the generic one has got corn syrup in it or corn starch in it. And it's kids' vitamins, little babies' vitamins right now. When you see the little Flintstones, high fructose corn syrup. Now, here you're giving something supposedly healthy, and it's just really bothersome. So Dr. Dantini started giving these, discovered the high fructose corn syrup. When he changed that and removed that after surgery, he no longer had problems with his patients. And he wrote a report on it. And he had another scientist working with him at the time, and the other scientist was too afraid to say anything. So he backed away from it. Dr. Dantini said, "No way," and he put that in his report, and he moved forward with it and continues to tell people about it because it's in the hospitals right now. So patients may be having reactions because their immune system's down right after surgeries or whatever illness they have, their immune response is down. They already have maybe liver problems and cardiac problems. And so they go into the thinking they're going to be giving a healthy medicine, and they might have multiple IVs. So here they are with these multiple IVs getting pumped up with medicine with the high fructose corn syrup and high fructose corn syrup in the IVs.
Well, let's go a step farther, because I think, by the way, he's a wonderful expert witness for
it. Ah, be terrific for you.
One of his books puts out this a very interesting concept about food allergies. If you keep eating the same food over all day, every day, doesn't matter what it is, sooner or later you get allergies. So many.
It's an intolerance allergy.
Right. What it is really food intolerance, mm-hmm. to be specific. So what happens in this scenario is, people don't realize that they're eating all this high fructose corn syrup, and they don't realize as time goes on they're developing this food allergy because they're eating so much corn their body's becoming intolerant to it. That intolerance is one of the things that leads to the weight gain issues that we're talking
and
about.
And illness, inflammation, arthritis,
right,
illness.
Right, all of it, mm-hmm. gout, all of it. So there's a certain element of that that also needs to be looked at. So the high fructose corn syrup has a far-reaching effect on every part of your body, and that is where I think that some of the information being put out doesn't cover everything, and hopefully your clients will find that as a tool that they can advance.
Oh, I really hope so, because the old days of dextrose in the IVs is a lot different than putting high fructose corn syrup, GMO, pesticide-filled, high fructose corn syrup into your veins. I don't know about you guys, but does that sound healthy?
Well, that sounds yummy.
What about just Gatorade? Is that bad for you, too?
Well, Gatorade took it out, as a matter of fact. Part of our, we had a campaign for a while where we pushed a variety of different products to remove high fructose corn syrup. In fact, both Pepsi and Coke, to avoid this controversy, have been working on a product called Truvia and Pruvia, which are now available and can be sold in Whole Foods, except instead of taking organic stevia, which is a competitor to sugar, and putting it in, what they did is refined it and made a chemical duplicate of it in the laboratory to sell it. Why? Because once again, when it comes to a product that's natural and nature produces it, you can't patent it. So rather than import something that would be good for our society, natural sugar, stevia is its competitor, whichever way you want to go, they would prefer to make something in a lab. So, you know, basically we have a country where people would rather sell you chemicals than sell you real food. And that's part of what, you know, the movement is with Adam, is to return everybody to natural sugar. And along the way, we need to return our country to natural everything, in my opinion.
Yeah, we got to go back to organic. But
okay, and don't forget ConAgra's Hunt's ketchup.
Oh,
boy,
yeah.
Boy, they were pissy with me.
I'll tell them that. I want to hear this again. Go for it, Simon.
Oh, I need to find the picture. Hunt's actually have dropped high fructose corn syrup from their product, and they did it in a big way. Huge banner on their plastic squeeze bottles of ketchup. No high fructose corn syrup. And so I couldn't resist. I had to aggravate them. But I'm good at aggravating people.
No, but, you know, Peter, coming back to this, I agree with you. This is how you do it. But oddly enough, it's not with the people. When Ash and I counsel people on health, you'd be surprised how many people say to us, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to know that my food is like this, because I just want to eat it in peace. So,
and then until I get I got another phone call 3 weeks ago. Well, I now have breast cancer. What can I do?
I agree with that. I agree with that, and that's a phenomenon that I encounter all the time. Mm-hmm. And I don't really know what to think of that, because you tell people that's killing you, and they don't want to hear it. And it's not just you know, the high fructose corn syrup. It's everything. It's cigarettes. It's pesticides in meats. It's all kinds of things. People just don't want to hear it. So where does that leave us? I mean, if some people just don't want to hear it, what's the world supposed to do?
Well, first of all, we have to understand that high fructose corn syrup, along with a few other products, specifically MSG, are chemically addicting. And when we accept they're chemically addicting and treat them like other controlled substances that are chemically addicting, we can make some step forward in resolving this problem. Therein lies the biggest problem to me. And one of the reasons why people can't get off high fructose corn syrup is exactly that. It is chemically addicting. So, and to get them to address that, I find very, very difficult. Don't you, Ash?
Oh, extremely difficult.
Okay.
It's very discouraging, difficult.
We're almost at the end of the program. Adam, do you like music?
do I like music? Of course.
You just got conned.
Uh-oh.
Talk about a one-hit studio band.
Oh, honey, honey, you are my candy girl, and you
Song, but I just couldn't resist. It had to be played today.
Oh, it's perfect.
So, but as we wrap up this show, Adam, do you have any final thoughts for us about this entire subject? And I mean the subject of not the lawsuit, but the real bottom line issue, sugar versus high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah, you know, I think bottom line is that it's really just a case of food identity theft, you know. And there's a group in Washington D.C. called Citizens for Health.
Yeah.
They've been around since 1993, and they actually set up a website called foodidentitytheft.com, which talks about this example, but other case studies where, you know, some sort of product is being promoted as being natural or you know, having the attributes of another pre-existing product that people know about, and they're untruthful. And this, you know, this is really just a case in point here. I think that there are a lot of Americans who still don't know about the differences and who still don't know really what is in all the food that they're eating. And hopefully one of the effects of this lawsuit is going to be that more people learn the truth.
Mm-hmm. Do we lose everybody?
No.
Nope.
Yeah. So, Ashley, you have any final comments at all?
In 2008, in June, as Adam started to say, was saying earlier, over an 18-month period, the Corn Refiners Association spent $20 to $30 million on public relations and advertising campaign to convince consumers that high fructose corn syrup isn't as evil as everyone is making it out to be. And they hired a group called Omnicom Group Firm DDB. Now, when I looked them up, it turns out that this particular group is also, I thought I had it up and going because I was ready for my close. Mr. Nabil, can you hold the camera for a minute? The lobbying for Russian government is Omnicom Group subsidiary Ketchum Incorporated, and it is among one of the biggest PR agents used by the Russian government. Now, Russia's wonderful, but as we all know, there's pretty much a lot of propaganda, I think, that comes out of Russia. Is that true or not? Should I not say that on the air? So here we have the Omnicom group that is used by the Russian government pumping out all sorts of, you know, propaganda, and it happens to be the same campaign group who is your Corn Refiners Association spending $20 to $30 million on public relations and advertising campaign. So people need to stop and realize that if they get a phone-in-phone conversation, influential mommy bloggers, these are not people that are actual mommies that are writing to you. These are people from the Corn Refiners Association who've been paid millions of dollars to lobby to make you eat what they need you, they need you to buy, because that's what they get paid to do. It is not healthy. It has been proven over and over not to be healthy. When a scientist gets pushed in a corner, they all say, let's run more tests, because if they don't, they'll get fired. And it's a sad state of affairs, and I'm very pleased that people such as Adam Fox are out there representing us, the people, and that the sugar company came up to the courthouse and actually in Los Angeles and actually saying, we're putting our foot down. And God bless every single one of those farmers. I am glad and proud to be an American. I'm glad to be my roots in Ohio from farmers, and I am very, very pleased to be on this show, and thank you. Thank you very much for allowing me to be on the show.
Oh, and we didn't even whip up on Ohio this week.
And I guess I'll close it off, Simon, with this comment.
Oh, Peter didn't speak.
We've missed Peter.
In all honesty, I really don't have much to add. I think people have to look out for themselves as best they can in this world. You can't count on the FDA to keep stuff like this out of your diet. You can't count on other people to do it for you. I think people should do a lot more to try to protect themselves, because people out there are just trying to make money off you any way they can, and they don't care what they put in your body to do it.
And your body's a whole, so listen to what your body's saying. You're right, absolutely, Peter.
And Adam, I really want to thank you for taking part. I'm not quite sure what happened in in your wrap up, but if you're still with us, are you still with us?
I am. Yes.
Yeah. And I have this ending comment to the show, Simon, for everybody. Yeah. Peter's words are very wise about reading everything, but we're in a stage in our economy and in our lives where advertising is more important than the truth. You see it with the presidential campaign right now. We have to have a truth fact checker for everything that comes out of everybody's mouth, and I'm beginning to believe that might not be a bad idea for corporate business too, because we're reaching a point, because as an American, that I'm not sure what to believe from anybody anymore, and I think it's important that most Americans take that position. And they sit back and they look where everything with a jaundiced eye, as we like to say in this business, and make certain that what you eat and what you're putting into your body is safe. And Adam, you're doing a heck of a job, and we support you 100%. Come back and see us again.
And if there's anything either one of us can do, or any one of us four can do, I'm going to volunteer you guys too. You know, we definitely will do it. You need me to do research, Adam, I'll be there. You just put it.
Adam,
you
I'm going to. I'm going to bake you cookies and send them to you with sugar.
We might all like that.
We would love it.
Excellent. Well, you know, thank you all very much for your support and encouragement, and for inviting me on the show. I want to say, I mean, it's too bad that we didn't get to hear really from the other side, but that was their choice. I'm not so sure that they're going to get to have the same choice, because when you have a trial, everyone's got to show up. But thanks again, and I'll probably take you up on a number of those things, including the cookies.
Okay.
just Google it. You'll find us.
You can rest assured that the CRA are going to be hating all of us in the morning. They'll need a high energy, high fructose corn syrup drink to get their day started.
I bet they don't drink the stuff. I bet you they don't. I can't imagine them allowing their kids knowing the truth.
Right.
But the truth will set them free.
And by the way, I think they should be forced to submit their survey on whether they allow their children to have high fructose corn syrup. I think it would be a good question.
Okay, I have to close this program down. I want to thank you all for taking part. It was a great discussion. And Bolling and Barrett will be back next Sunday. Till then, goodbye.
Cookies.